Hello, and welcome to this episode of the Postural Restoration Podcast. Again, as I mentioned, kind of in the first episode of 2022, you know, a new year really gives us the time to reset and focus on the year ahead. Our guest today, Dr. James Carlson, allows us to, in some ways, as I mentioned in the last episode, reflect on the past and not only your journey, Dr. Carlson, but also kind of, Ron's journey in some ways and the Institute's journey to, so to speak, collide with your path and with the work that you've done throughout your career. So I'm really excited to get to know you better, Dr. Carlson. I know a lot of our listeners are very excited to hear your story, you know, and a lot of the information that they have seen of or know about you has come from, you know, either reference material, your work, your written work, your authorship, your career in general, the way you look at what we will later describe and define as the stomatognathic system, and the occlusal cranial complex as a whole. So again, very excited to have you here today. I want to thank you for spending the time with us. And other than that, we'll jump right in, Dr. Carlson, to kind of your story. So again, thank you for being with us today. So if you could, for us, just take us, you know, again, as I said in my conversation with you, in as much detail as you would kind of like to get into, you know, start us back with your early part of your career, Dr. Carlson, and, you know, dentition in general and how you started your career and how your early years shaped the trajectory of where you are today.
Well, I'm going to take my story all the way back almost 60 years ago. And it started when I was a junior in dental school at the University of Minnesota. And at that time, I was dating a young lady who ended up being my wife. And she was working for a Dr. Garvey in St. Paul, who was a nephrologist. He was one of the top dentists in the Midwest at that time, using nephrological principles. And so from that, I was introduced to Dr. Charles Stewart, and I was invited to attend a two-day seminar by Dr. Stewart. At that time, Dr. Stewart was probably the top nephrologist in the United States, probably in North America. He invented the Stewart articulator. And so during that two-day program, I determined that that's what I wanted to do for a living. I wanted to do full mouth reconstruction and do that level of dentistry. This is very complex. And from that meeting, I was invited to Dr. Garvey's office, where I spent a great deal of time, actually most of my time, with Kenny, his in-house dental technician. And so I'm standing there as this young man, with his eyes wide open and just taking it all in, and how all of this nephrological, these principles were being implemented on this Stewart articulator. Very, very complex. And then all of a sudden I heard Dr. Garvey's dental handpiece turn on, and he was grinding in the occlusion on a patient in the next room. And at that moment, I realized there's something wrong with this picture. The nephrological principles that were being done in the dental laboratory were not working out in the operatory. And so after graduation, I spent 3 years in the Navy. And after my naval career, I went into private practice in a small town in Alaska. And about 2 or 3 years into practice, I had another great epiphany. And that was, I made a set of dentures, or my technician made a set of dentures using these nephrological principles of CRCO, CR means centric relation of the temporomandibular joints, and CO of the dental occlusion. And so I inserted these dentures and the patient occluded and everything was just hunky-dory. A week later, she called and said, my teeth don't fit. So she came back in and sure enough, her mandibular teeth did not fit with her maxillary teeth on these dentures. I quote unquote took a new bite, reset the teeth, and everything was okay. And those two experiences got me on a journey. And that journey began so many years ago, and it's continued even to this day. And from then, I ended up moving from the state of Alaska to Whidbey Island in western Washington. And while I was there, I had a call from a good friend of mine in Anchorage, and he asked me to take over his practice while he and his wife were on vacation. So I go back to Anchorage, and while I'm in his office, I discover a manual written by Mr. George Ebersole. And George is a therapist, and I don't know if he's still with us. He's in Las Vegas. Titled the manual was titled Dental Kinesiology. Didn't know what that was. I contacted George and I took two seminars from him. And it changed my thinking because kinesiology is something that you and all of the PRI folks are very much involved with. You know what that is. Dentists don't know that. And so I learned that jaw position was affected by the neuromuscular system. And from that experience, I then fabricated oral orthotics for my son's football team members. And so I had I took this knowledge that I received from George and I applied it because I wanted to see if it really worked. And so I made these oral orthotics for at least a dozen of the boys. And sure enough, some of them, it worked and they improved their muscle strength and their ability on the football field and also in baseball.
Jim, if you don't mind, describing, was this kind of the first time in your early career that you had experimented with that type of intervention? And if you don't mind just briefly describing the appliance you were fitting at that time.
Well, what George taught, he taught that there was a quote unquote sweet spot, a sweet spot for the mandible in relationship to the maxilla. And so that vertical height, and it also had to do with the anterior posterior relationship as well. It was there, it was this sweet spot in that relationship where the neuromuscular system and the temporomandibular joints were working at 100%.
And so Dr. Carlson, how, again, to kind of go down this rabbit hole a little bit, just because I know our community will be interested in how you were thinking at the time, and later we'll get to kind of how, if that holds true today and you're thinking along the same lines. But when you talk about the sweet spot, is that something that you were at the time were correcting through cuspation, space, expansion? What did this particular appliance do to achieve that sweet spot?
It was fit over the lower teeth or the mandibular teeth, and the height of it, in other words, the plastic thickness that kept the mandible apart from the maxilla was different on each one of these kids. And I was just using applied kinesiology, basically arm testing, that I learned from Dr. Ebersol, who learned that from George Goodhart.
What a great place to start our conversation. You know, you were doing what you are now today back then, and that was kind of the start of it. So what a great place to start. As you mentioned, you were introduced to a kinesiology type mindedness into a dental, oral, non-kinesiology world. And at the time, you know, it still is not easy to find individuals, as you and I have had discussions about, that even think that way, to implicate, you know, neurologic, musculature, patterning, drive, anything you want to talk about as far as kinesiology and neuromusculature. You and us at the Institute, we're trying to find those people still today. And back then it was, you know, no easier and probably a lot more difficult than the technology we have today to connect. But how did those, you know, if you take us kind of beyond that first encounter with some of those individuals, how did those interactions with those thought processes change your next step in your career, or kind of what you did next?
Well, at about that same time, I was involved with a study club in Seattle. And that study club was with a number of dentists, and there weren't very many of us, maybe six or eight of us, who were looking at applying some of this knowledge into their dental practices. In other words, treating quote unquote neuromuscular issues and joint issues. And one of those was a dentist by the name of LeVar Reinecker. And LeVar had been influenced by Barney Jankelson. And Barney Jankelson was a dentist in Seattle who was really the father of neuromuscular dentistry. And he passed away in the early 1980s, but his influence is with us even today. And that was, he was measuring muscles, he was measuring joint issues, he was measuring jaw movements with biometric instrumentation. And that was developed by a technician by the name of John Radke at the time. And I am in contact even today with John Radke. He and I are still emailing. So our relationship goes back, almost 50 years.
Well, and it's those relationships that build who we are. And even us as an institute, we come down, you know, really, when you define a person or an institute or an educational system or, you know, any type of an approach, you really define it by the people that are doing it. And we define ourselves by our providers and by our PRI community. It's that same community of people around you that I think would define, you know, your career. And those individuals are what drove you and what continued your lifelong learning to become who you are. Jim, you know, you mentioned the kind of the first time you saw physical changes through a simplistic type, even if it was an eyeball measurement of you watching some football players run around on a field. Perhaps that was your first kind of physical manifestation of something you were doing with an oral system and seeing it have effects on the other parts of the body. I'm the son of someone who likes to play around with devices and integration and orthotics himself. And I know, you know, what that can do for you as a clinician and for the people that are being affected by it, those athletes or those football players. But after you had that realization of the physical side of things, I know your work, I don't know your work deeply as Ron or people who have studied it in depth, but I know about your work that you are very passionate about form and function and the relationship between the two. And, you know, take us a little bit in that direction of how you, you know, how seeing the function piece through the physical aspect or through the physical changes allowed you to go back and say, okay, what I'm doing here in the oral cavity and through the system as a whole, which we'll get into next, kind of defining how you look at the stomatomathic system. But talk to us a little bit about how your career and how your literature and a lot of the work you've done has focused around that form versus function type of a concept.
Well, the next thing that happened to me is that being involved with this TMJ study club was that I took a course from Mr. Harold Gelb. And in those days, Gelb was one of the top TMJ gurus on the tour. And so I acquired more and more knowledge. And so I started applying that with some of my patients. So it went from the football team to actually real patients. And so I got into this mode of offering that in my dental practice. And through a mutual acquaintance in Bellevue, which is a suburb of Seattle, some of you might even have heard of this company called Microsoft, and that's where its headquarters is. And at the time, there was a chiropractor in Bellevue who was searching for a dentist who had knowledge about what I had knowledge of, and he couldn't find one. And through this mutual acquaintance, we were introduced to one another over lunch. And he asked me 3 questions, and I answered all of them positively. And he asked me, he said, "Do you know anything about TMJ?" And I said, "Yes, I do." And he said, "Do you know anything about applied kinesiology?" I said, "Yes, I do." And then he asked me about a spiritual situation, and I said, "Yes." And he said, "Would you then join me? Would you move your practice from Whidbey Island to Bellevue and help me treat my patients?" He knew something that I didn't know. And so I said, "Yes," but he said, "In order to do that, you have to attend some seminars in Omaha given by Major Desjarnet." And I said, "Why do I want to do that?" He said, "Well, if you want to work with me, that's what you have to do." So off I went, and I learned the cranial bones move. And I attended 2 seminars with Desjarnet. And that began a 21-year relationship with this chiropractor, Dr. David Vlasic. And for 21 years, he and I were pioneering this relationship between a dentist and a chiropractor, helping patients that were not being helped by the quote-unquote academics or the standard community. And there was only 3 partnerships like that, one in New Jersey, one in St. Louis, and David and myself. And so our professors were really our patients. No, there was nobody else out there who had this knowledge. And so we acquired the knowledge for 21 years.
Well, and based off of those type of, I know you have had several different practices, you know, locations, as you mentioned, you've already at this point in our timeline moved to Bellevue with your practice. And at this point are kind of in your second setting, if you will. But I know you have had many clinical practice settings, as you mentioned, and I was unaware of that lineage-wise, your 21-year history with, you know, kind of working directly with the field of chiropractic. And that's exactly, in some ways, what we are doing with your field, you know, coming at it from the other side of things, looking for integrative dentists to work with, as you know. But what did those clinical practices, as you said, I loved your comment about your patients being your professors. There's nothing more true to that statement. That's really what our institute was built on. We use research and we use literature and have everything scientifically to back what we do. But at the end of the day, as you know, everything that we do is because of our patients and the outcomes that we see. So as you guys were integrating holistically and using each other's world, so to speak, if you would, again, kind of take us into that form versus function relationship and how that partner, that clinical partner in your life was able to manage, if you will, the form and function side of things while you came at it from the cranial occlusal top-down approach. You know, what did that partnership for both of you look like throughout those 21 years?
Well, it was a relationship where he would do his adjusting on the cranium and pretty much on the SI joint. And then I was introduced by Brian Rothbart, who was a podiatrist in Bellevue at the time, to the relationship of the feet and how that was affecting posture. And I was becoming very aware of the top to bottom approach to taking care of patients. Now, during that time, there was another experience that I had that really changed my life even more drastically than what I've shared. And that was, I had a patient and who was wearing the orthotic that I made, and that patient was being treated by another chiropractor. I had, by that time, I was working with at least a half a dozen chiropractors in the Seattle area. And that patient wasn't getting better. And so this chiropractor said, well, I'm going to change dentists. I'm going to send this patient to Dr. Hardy. And I said, who's Hardy? And I went with that patient to and the chiropractor to Dr. Hardy's office, and he introduced me to the Aculiner. And I had never heard of the Aculiner before. I knew nothing about biomechanics. I knew some things, but I didn't know what he knew. And so I saw him make a mold of her upper jaw and put it in the Aculiner. And sure enough, her bite plane was not level. And I took 5 minutes and I said, how much is that Aculiner? And he told me the price. As I buy it, I said, I'll take it. I was his first customer. Long story short, I ended up buying his interest out in our business. We actually started making it a business. I redesigned the Aculiner, and with my oldest son, Paul, and I, we started selling Aculiners worldwide. And what that Aculiner taught us is that the bite plane, the plane of occlusion, has to be level, and it has to be at right angles to the forces of occlusion. And I've learned more and more as I go along how that applies not only to the quote-unquote bite, but it applies to all of the structure of the body, top to bottom.
I'm very thankful that you brought up the Aculiner, because I was going to bring it up anyways. But again, I'm not a dentist, Dr. Carlson, and I don't work in your field, but I know because I've spoken to these individuals. We go to dental conferences and we get approached. And in fact, over the past year, after we started kind of advertising and listing your involvement in the upcoming symposium, I was at a conference, and a lady next to me happened to study under you as you were teaching her clinic how to use the AccuLiner and how to calibrate it and use it clinically. And so this conversation around you and your work, especially around this AccuLiner, is very much, I think, still something that people associate to your work and to your name and to your, you know, really who you are. But for any of us that, such as myself, I've seen them. I know a little bit about it, Dr. Carlson, but could you just briefly, and the only reason I ask is because, you know, PRI is such a non-linear approach, I guess you would say. So your world of linear angles, angulation, and 90 degree angles, right angles, in the oral, alignment is similar to what we do in different areas of the body through the pelvis and the hips and the lower extremities with angulation of feet on walls or different angulation that we use throughout our techniques and our repositioning activities that we look of in a way similar but different to how you look at this thing called a plane, a bite plane, and aligning that bite. So just briefly, if you could, take a minute to just, in layman's terms, if you were talking with a patient, what is it that the AccuLiner system would do for that uneven bite plane? And then is the AccuLiner itself the same tool that would help you correct that plane, or how then would you go and correct that uneven bite plane?
Well, the AccuLiner is an analyzer, number one. It's an analyzer like a level that a carpenter would use or a bricklayer would use to see if their work that they are doing is level or not. Now, when I first began using the AccuLiner, I was using the hamunar incisive papilla plane as a level horizontal plane of the skull, because that's what it was built on. And then Dr. Walker, who is a chiropractor, met me at a conference, and he said, "It's a great tool, but it needs a face bow." So I started to change my thinking, and because of my awareness of cranial bones, I knew there were temporal bones, I knew there was a sphenoid, I knew there was a maxillary complex. I'm very well acquainted with the cranial and facial bones. And so instead of using the sphenoid bone and the maxilla as a horizontal reference system, he said to use the temporal bones and the maxillary complex as a horizontal reference plane. And so I added into the AccuLiner the what we call the otic plane, which goes from the two temporal bones and the anterior nasal spine. And so then that horizontal reference plane is used then as level, and is the maxillary complex, not the teeth, is the bone, the maxillary complex, which is are the two maxillary bones and the two palatine bones. Are those bones as a unit, are they level? And why is that important? It's because of force. Every time that we humans close our teeth together and we bite or chew, which is only 2,000 times a day, is that when we close and we contact our teeth, those forces go into the cranium. They also go into the mandible, and they also go into the cervical spine. And those need to be dissipated. They need to be dissipated in a physiologic manner. And if the bite plane, meaning the upper teeth, which we call the occlusal plane of the maxillary teeth that are attached to the maxilla, if that is not at right angles, we're going to have destructive forces going into the cranial system. Now, that cranial system also includes the contents of the neurocranium, and that is all of the cranial nerves. It's a cranial, the brain itself, the brainstem, it just the whole nine yards, the cerebral spinal fluid, the blood flow, the whole system. And force affects function. Force affects structure. And so these are basic rules of physics and the basic rules of biophysics. And it's not just about muscles. It's not about muscle performance. It's about the performance of everything that goes on above C1 and actually C7.
Well, and that takes us kind of into my next area that I would like to get your insight on. And in some regards, I think, you know, this comes from my level of understanding, but in some regards, what you did for us just now is really define how you view the stomatognathic system. If you have anything to add, please do. But, you know, how everything that you did just describe to us, how has your career and your life's work challenged you to implement the entire stomatognathic system as a whole, whether it be through, you know, bite planes and 90 degree angles, but through that, again, I'll return back to the initial part of our conversation and what you just mentioned, you know, form dictates function and function dictates form, so to speak. But how have you worked hard over the last, you know, part of your career to have others receive that same information as you and I can talk about it and as this community can understand it? What has been the hardest for you to then go and have the same dialogue with other dentists, with other orthodontists, with other surgeons, with other chiropractors and clinicians and therapists? What is the hardest part between, you know, understanding everything we just discussed as far as stomatognathic involvement with the bite and the maxilla, the mandible, the cranial bones, the nerve innervation and the foramens and the space around all those things? How have those type of mindsets made that difficult to get other people to appreciate? Or, you know, where do you see the conversation going in your field as far as bringing others who are possibly interested or like-minded in that type of a thinking and integrating them with what we're trying to do and what you've been trying to do throughout your career?
Well, that's a very, very interesting question that you put on the table, because it brings up a lot of old memories. And my memories are, along with my two sons, and what happened, we ended up as a family. We had a family business called Aculiner Supply. And so we were selling Aculiners, and my two sons were, one son was the general manager, owner of the business. The other son was acted as a salesperson, and the rejection rate was horrendous. The dental community as a whole didn't even want to know. I did a seminar in a little town in Nebraska called Lincoln, and I did that seminar as a guest speaker for a dental laboratory in Lincoln. And And the laboratory is no longer there, but in that seminar, there were only, I think, three or four people that attended. And one of them was the chairman, the head honcho at the University of Nebraska Dental School in the area of prosthodontics. So he was chairman of the prosthetics department, and the other individual with him was his assistant, who became the chairman or the head of the prosthetic department at the University of Iowa Dental School. These two men asked me no questions. They were not interested. They weren't interested in this knowledge into their two dental schools. I took it to the dean of the dental school at the University of Minnesota, because one of the members of the state board had, quote unquote, drank my Kool-Aid, and he wanted this implemented into our alma mater. And the dean and the head of the continuing education department just took my books and they probably threw them away. It was the same thing at the University of Washington, the University of Oregon. So, and I happened to know the head of the TMJ department at UCLA. That's a no small school, top school in California. And I knew this man personally. I grew up with him. We were neighbors as kids. We played kick the can together. I sent him a copy of one of my books and he just sent it back, unopened, not interested. My point about sharing that is not to degrade anybody. My point is that the academics in dentistry don't care. They don't care. I could tell you more stories, but I won't. Yep. It is what it is. So I'm very open to meeting dentists that want to integrate. And I will just share this one statement: without an integrated team of therapists in your field, whether it's an osteopath, a chiropractor, physical therapist, massage therapist, who can do their magic, and a dentist who understands what I'm talking about, without working as a team, the patients aren't going to get well. It's going to happen.
Couldn't agree more with you. You know, I think it's fair to say that you have been introduced enough to our community to know that we're on the same mission and the same path, so to speak. We'll get into kind of a little bit of your PRI introduction, I guess, next, and some of the people that you've been exposed to in your regional area of Seattle. I know you've done some things in the community with some of the PRI providers there. It's exactly right. You know, we have the same strive, if you will, to build those teams and to help build those teams. And to really every day, what I strive to do is connect those people. And I know you do a great job of connecting people who are interested in this type of a conversation as well. This morning, you know, you and I were emailing back and forth about an individual in Australia who had some interest and saw some things change personally and saw what form versus function, so to speak, can do. What amazes me on a daily, on a very real daily level is, you know, you mentioned that all of these academic settings and your journey, and I know you barely skim the surface. I know that you have probably hundreds of more similar outcomings of trials that you went into academic settings and, you know, provided information and essentially the door was shut behind you on the way out. We have had those same experiences. Our providers have had those same experiences. Ron has had those experiences countless times. And I think that's why, you know, we're so excited about you and your work, and why it does strengthen what we do. And I hope what we do strengthens your efforts as well. That being said, I think there is a lot of, I try to stay optimistic, and I think that the interest level is growing for this type of a conversation and integration. Nonetheless, it's just as slow of a growing mindset in some of these other fields as it is in dentistry. So we know of that dilemma, so to speak, and you and us both continue to push for anyone's interest to learn more. We're always available, and I know you're always interested in other people who are interested. The one thing I wanted to, you touched upon him a little bit earlier, but if you could please, to my knowledge, Dr. Carlson, I believe you have around a half dozen publications, probably more. I know I'm missing some you've written articles and resources, but as far as published work and, the two more relevant publications that we have really found great resource from would be, your two books, so to speak, that we now offer to anyone interested would be Analyzing the Stomatognathic System and also the Orthocranial Occlusion and Dentition Design, which was formerly known as Physiological Occlusion. I hope I got that correct. But if you could please walk us through just briefly how you attempted to outline your work with both the AccuLiner and bite planes and that type of a conversation, and also how you look at the stomatognathic system as a whole in the other publication. So if you could just give us your two thoughts as the author of these publications and just outline kind of how the two differ, if you could. And that way, anyone who's interested in those publications, they are available through our website as a reseller. But if you could just, again, for the layman in front of you, what are the biggest differences between some of these publications and how you outlined your work in them?
Well, when I began writing, which was over 20 odd years ago, and that was right around 1990, I began writing about occlusion. And my writings then were in that arena, and that's why I called the original manuscript, which is now has to do with orthocranial occlusion, I was writing about physiologic occlusion, and I didn't include dentition design. And as I learned more and more, I became more aware of the differences. And then about 5 or 6 years ago, my son Paul came to me and he said, "Dad, you should write another book." Out of that, I ended up writing two new books. And one of them is Beyond Basic Dental Care. And the other one is What I Wasn't Taught in Dental School. I would recommend, I will get to the answer your question. I would recommend that anyone who's interested in pursuing more knowledge about what you and I are talking about is that they buy this book. Now, this is an introductory book. It's an introductory book to the stomatognathic system.
And that's the Beyond Basic Dental Care.
It's Beyond Basic Dental Care. What we as dentists are taught in dental school is basic dental care. It's basically fixing teeth and gums. But what's beyond that is the stomatognathic system. What it is and how are you going to fix it? Now, how you're going to fix it is then, first of all, you have to analyze it. If you can't analyze it, how do you know how to fix it? Because you don't know what's wrong with it. And so this book was originally about occlusion, but then I changed the title because it was all about the stomatognathic system. it's not about just how the teeth come together, but it's about how the whole body is coming together from a dental perspective. So this is about analysis. So any dentist or any therapist who wants to know how to analyze the stomatognathic system, what information are you, do I need as a clinician, as a healthcare practitioner, no matter what you're doing regarding structure. This is about structure and function. So this is, that's what this is all about.
Nope. So that's the analyzing the stomatognathic system, and your third and kind of the third and final of our conversation.
This is the current edition of my original manuscript, and it has to do with what is orthocranial occlusion. What is it? And then it has to do with the mandible as well. It has to do with the dentition as well. Now, one of the things that I have found just in my short time dealing with Ron and the courses that I've taken and listening to you is the importance that Ron puts on the mandible. It's a big deal, and he understands it's a big deal. Now, the mandible is part of the stomatognathic system. It's not the whole stomatognathic system, but it's a big deal. And so part of what is in this manual has to do with how the mandible works. And it does not work like the dentist, we dentists are being taught in dental school. It doesn't work that way.
And what are, you know, again, if you just take 30 seconds, when you say it doesn't work that way, what is the biggest thing that comes to mind of how you, through that manuscript and your life's work, have looked at it differently?
Nathology, which is being taught in dental school, says there are two points, imaginary points in the head of the condyle, and that the mandible opens and closes and rotates around those two points. They're imaginary points. And there's an imaginary axis that goes between them, the axis of rotation in the head of the condyle. That is the cornerstone of nathology. And when we open, the mandible rotates around this imaginary hinge axis for the first 20 odd millimeters, and then it translates, and then it opens and closes on this hinge and translates back and forth. That is totally an old wives' tale. It's bunkum, and I proved it, and it's also been proven by some dental researchers in Switzerland, and they published the paper over 20 years ago. And it opens and closes on an axis that actually moves. The axis translates. And so that is in that book. And I've outlined it. And it's also been shown in 2005, I was one of two dentists in North America to be invited to the World Congress on Posturology in Bucharest, Romania. While I was there, my host was one of the members of the faculty of the dental school, and he and I hit it off, and he showed me a paper he has published. And in the paper he published about the hinge axis, there is 15 or 16 different locations. He did the research. So my point about sharing that is that this does not operate on a hinge. It just doesn't. And everybody involved with PRI and taking care of people who've got head, neck, and face pain, they have to understand that.
If they don't, it's your goal to help, and it's our goal to help, but you know, they're likely going to understand it in some way or another in the long run, whether they know it or not, through as you said, pain, dysfunction, you know, any type of a stomatognathic dysfunction that can come of it, eventually you have patients, probably now not even patients but colleagues, that probably deferred from you years ago that are hopefully see it 20 years later, but in some way or another they will get to the root cause of the pain.
Well, and in my books I've written this down, it's public, where I stand on it. The mandible is the fifth limb. We don't just have four limbs, we've got five limbs. The mandible is the fifth limb. And when I took the seminars that Ron put on, and I understood what he was saying, intrusion of the mandible. The mandible embryologically comes from two different bones, and it's got two different joints, and it's got two different sets of muscles, and you have two different sets of nerves that modulate its movement. And what I learned from him is it is trusion. Intrusion of the mandible is like trusion of the legs and the arms. I got it. It's a neurological thing. It's a no-brainer for me to pick up on this.
We're so excited for that excitement. And it's a good segue. You know, you mentioned how we have two sides of the mandible, two mandibles, if you want to go that far, two arms, two legs, two diaphragms. So it's a good segue into the two of you, and really the three of you, because we have another individual, Jason Masick, who is going to be accompanying you both for this year's Interdisciplinary Integration Symposium. And I mentioned it earlier, but that is occurring on April 21st and 22nd. We're very excited to offer this symposium this year on the stomatognathic system. And again, your segue about having two, I think would be a great time to get the two of you together and bring Ron in to highlight some of the work you both have been working on in preparation for that symposium. A little fun fact for the year is the clinic we work with across the street, the Horesca Clinic, has kind of chosen to use the year of 2022 as their focal point for the year to focus on that we have two sides. And I know you appreciate that as much as we do. So what I'm going to do is go grab Ron and we'll pull him in so that the two of you can sit down and discuss what it is you're trying to accomplish and what you've been working on in preparation for this symposium. Well, welcome back. And I'm excited to have you both kind of sit down and focus around the next part of our conversation. Again, I mentioned the symposium coming up in April and how excited we are to have you coming back to Lincoln. I didn't realize earlier you mentioned that you've had opportunities to speak in Lincoln and to, you know, the Omaha community and a guy that you both appreciate, I think, out of Nebraska City, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. You know, we're excited to have you back in the community and back here in our community. I mentioned earlier, Jim, that you have kind of really, in some ways, got your feet wet with your local PRI community around you in Seattle, some of our providers out in that region. And I know they're very excited about your involvement as well as we are. So since we have both of you here, you know, I'd like to just kind of have Ron share with us what you know, he's really excited about in the coming month. He has, you know, one of the things we haven't really focused on in this conversation as of yet is the NAFIC system in detail and some of the things that you guys will be covering throughout, you know, both of your presentations. So I'll let him start it off, Jim, and then we'll kind of get your view on things and what you're working on just briefly as we wrap up our conversation today and look towards the symposium next month.
Well, I'm excited to have both Jim and Jason here, RJ, next month. This symposium is kind of a fluke, Dr. Carlson. It started off, I really didn't know if we were going to put, we had these two COVID years, and I didn't know if we were really going to be able to generate a symposium. We had so much going on, and, you know, our maker works in wonderful ways. When I found out that you existed, it was like a full bore, you know, to get that opportunity to work with you a little bit. And actually, this is more than an opportunity. It's almost like a calling, if you want to know the truth. When I reflect a little bit about this upcoming symposium, RJ, I think of the word ortho. You know, we have a lot of interested people in orthopedics and ortho activity. What does the word mean? And unfortunately, when I grew up in school, ortho was orthopedics. And unfortunately, that's just one component of that Latin prefix. There's the orthocranial system, there's the orthodontic system, there's the orthostatic system, and there's the orthonathic system, and there's ortho Carlson system. You know, and when I hear the word ortho, I immediately think of you. I immediately think of you, and I have always thought of people like you. There aren't a whole lot of ortho Carlsons walking around the face of the earth. And I mean that sincerely. That's why I think this is a wonderful opportunity for anybody that's going to come in here, a few gentlemen get together and just share, you know, just share correspondence that we three all have had in our lives regarding that word. Jason, you know, started off in an athletic medicine type of mentality, became a PT, and he's had ortho in his blood from day one, but not just pedic, you know, not just orthopedics. So I think it's just really a cool opportunity, period, for the three of us. And then hopefully any of you who can make it, you'll find this, insightful. I was telling Jen the other day, RJ and James, I was telling her, there's no way we're going to get through all that material. I saw all the work that you sent, and it's so beautifully laid out. There's a lot of material. And I have a lot of things I want to talk about. And I know Jason is going to talk a lot about muscle influence on these hinge joints that are really regulatory in function when it comes to navigation. Those are the lateral pterygoids and the muscles that we move our mandibles with from side to side. And we have two. And so when we look at that and we look at the objectives of the symposium, I get excited just reading the titles, let alone knowing that, you know, hopefully we'll get through most of it, but we'll have a manual, right? RJ, we're going to have a manual. And I already know.
We never get through all of it.
I never know how much we're going to get through, but you know what? That manual is worth the penny in itself. Just recognizing what we're going to do with it. But lastly, I want to say this to you, Jim, this word navigation is something that I'm going to hit in terms of how we as humans, and not just dentals, we're dental students, we're physical therapy students, we're students all our lives. But as students, and as students has been around for a few decades, you and I, we know that the most important thing we want to do is steer people correctly, steer people with whether we want to realign something, whether we want teeth to hit better or neck to stay more neutral, or whether or not we want to be able to alternate with these, what I call these central process generators inside of us that has this need for rhythmic function, breathing, this central pattern, this pattern function can often lead into some dysfunction if we don't keep that rhythm, that alternation. And there's not a better system to do that for all human function. And that would include all physiology and all physics and all psychology function, then the stomatonathic system and what it has to offer, rhythmicity. In other words, the ability to turn and evolve from, you know, evolutionary viewpoint from side to side, respectfully of what we're doing at the time we're doing it. That's called navigation. So we threw the word navigation in this this course. I'm going to read the title, and then Jim, I'd love to have your input on what this title means as well, and then I'll turn it back over to RJ. But the stomatognathic system is obviously a system that a lot of people, I believe, Jim and RJ, are still confused over. What is it? What does it mean? And how does it relate to this word called integration of navigation, you know, or the way we navigate ourselves and how we process that information and how do we process information with things like a tongue, teeth, our eyes, our muscles that we chew with, the things we swallow with, the tongue, our hyoid, all that is part of that stomatognathic, you know, system. And then looking at the interdisciplinary approach, Jim, you and I both know that the complexity is not that complex if you just look at the systems that need to be working together, whether you're a chiropractor who likes to work with vertebrae of the neck, or a physical therapist who likes to work with vertebrae of the neck, or a dentist that likes to work with vertebrae of the neck and doesn't even know they like to do it. It's a course like this that I think will entertain that likeness. And so when we look at this approach in managing spatial navigation as it relates to structural strength of that navigation, which is neurodonics, which is neuroorthodontistry, is exciting. Because that's really, I believe, where you came from. And I know it's where my buds of, you know, budding came from. And with that being said, this is one of those few opportunities where we can actually look at a topic in a very unnatural way, a very natural way, but from a very unnatural lens, a very unnatural perspective. There's nothing probably more natural than what I just said, than this need for our system to be ortho, so we can navigate with these pattern generators without using central processing. In other words, it's autonomics, it's automatic, it's a gift, but people don't know that. They don't understand the word ortho. So I hope that was an overview of how I see this kind of laying out. And without, you know, too much notation, I think the three of us can really help people understand that viewpoint from our three sets of eyes. So did that help? Did that make sense? RJ, do you have any questions on that at all?
You know, as you mentioned, we'd love to get kind of your perspective, Dr. Carlson, on some of the work that you've been putting together and kind of your angle. So, you know, we talked about angulation earlier, how your work will kind of
complement
that discussion.
Yeah.
Well, I am new to this world of navigation. I am new to this world. And so I'm also... first of all, I'm very, very excited about working with all of you. I'm very much of your fan. And so one of the things I've been working on, even beyond just the PowerPoint program that I just sent you, is I'm extremely interested in proprioception.
Yeah.
And I am looking at right now, believe it or not, I'm looking at the proprioceptors and the ligaments that are associated with the pterygoid muscles. So you talk about trusion and you talk about navigation and this movement of the mandible as it is part of the whole body. Now, that's all brand new to me. But I understand what you said. Yeah. I'm just saying that it's very, very new to me.
Yeah.
It's absolutely foreign to any dentist.
Well, and see, Jim, I hear you say that. And the part that's not new to you is the animal itself. You know, the animal called a horse has a body and it has a bridle and it has a mandible, and you move the mandible to the right and doggone it, the horse is going to go to the right, and you move the mandible to the left and doggone it, that horse is probably going to go to the left. Otherwise you go buy a new horse. And so when you look at reflexes, like body on body, head on body, neck on body reflexes, we as humans steer ourselves with this thing called a tongue, a pterygoid, hyoids that actually steer us, guide us. They reflect our visual system's processing of information, our hearing, et cetera, et cetera. I know you are new to that maybe, but what you're not new to is what really is important for us to understand, that that mandible has to have a orthogonal, an orthopedic ortho structure of symmetry. And that's called the cranium. And that's where I'm looking at these, I'm looking at this orthocranial occlusion book in front of me. I know that's not new to you. You can't put a mandible back on this, two of these mandibles, these ramuses on an unaligned orthocranium, expect that horse to be led by a mandible anymore. That horse is going to be led by a cranium that's got a lot of tension through the system, because now you got a huge mandible. It's called calvaria of the head and eyes and ears that have temporal bones that are actually the origin of things called trusive muscles. And when temporal bones are moved more than mandible bones are moved, that horse will come to a quick, rigid stop. The only thing that's going to get that horse to move is a quick kick or a lot of push. And so I don't think it's new to you. Do you follow me? I think what's new to everybody is that your background is what I appreciated years ago, because you have an appreciation, affinity for looking at alignment, accurate alignment. And what the head and our friend Jack, Dr. Jackman here in Falls City would say, as in Nebraska City, I'm sorry, Nebraska City, would say, that's really, that goes back into the heart of it. The heart of it is osteopathic thinking. Osteopathic thinking means you don't want bones in wrong places. You want bones to, you know, resonate in right ranges. And that I know you have a respect for. It's, you know, there's nothing I could say that you would not know about that. So your preceding activity for someone like me was a good way for me to latch onto concepts that I know were very predictable with outcomes if we had that alignment in place first, that acceptance of where the body belongs under that horse's head. And once that horse knows that its body is now fluid-like, flow-like, because of the orientation of that head, then the mandible itself can do some remarkable things for that stomato activity. It can talk, it can communicate, it can swallow, it can be a major apparatus for musical instruments. It can help you understand fluid and flow to a system called the respiratory system that this institute's built off of. It opens the entorhinal aspects of, you know, how we think and how we process information with our limbic system included. It's just a big deal. And like, I think the thing that you, when you say I'm, it's new to you, the only thing that's possibly new is we're going to take that mandible, put it back on that head, and get those, that occlusal system to not be the responsible regulator for orientation of where we're going. Because the teeth tell you where you're going. They tell you there are history of navigation. They're telling you the direction we move in, the direction we move air. Most healthcare professionals, including dentists, don't understand that the teeth pattern really are a reflection of what we're doing for novel breathing, you know, not just orientated breathing patterns. And so that's what I mean by navigation. And we have this big thing in this institute, Jim, as you know, you've been to a few courses. We like to look at patterns that are built off of positions. And, you know, there's not a better system in the world than this stomatognathic system to understand that. I had to leave that for a few years of my life and go to orthopedic discussions called patellofemoral joints or SI joints, just to get back to the stage that I knew you were working with. By the way, a little jealous, at that point that you were doing that without having access to you. And so that's why now this access to each other can really come at it from two different perspectives. My perspective of where I came from as a physical therapist, growing up with people around me that really probably didn't have a full understanding of that preface of a word called, you know, not orthopedics, but ortho. And when I see your work, I get really, really supported internally, warm, that there's someone who put it in writing, someone who processed it. And then, you know, there are other people out there that have also had little pieces of it. But Jim, you dedicated your life to this. And so that's why I think you do know a little bit about navigation. You just maybe don't know it in the way we look at space or the way we look at alignment of posture. But we really have actually that word in common a lot because of how we steer function. And so that's kind of a premise for, I think, what RJ was hopeful would come out of this conversation, and that we're really got a symposium that I've put a lot of these on. I'm guessing Jen will say, is this number?
This is the 13th.
13th one. And it's the first one that I really feel that the presenters really have lived completely their lives around the discussion for the first time putting a symposium together. And you know what, Jim, I'm not even working hard in this symposium. It's just, it's already there. It's just getting us together to share. That's what I'm trying to get across. So I doubt we'll ever have a symposium like this where we have this much energy around topics and subjects of still monathic function like we will with this symposium, largely because of the history behind you, me, and Jason.
I know, I mentioned it with Dr. Carlson several times that, you know, I personally know of the excitement throughout our community. I know Dr. Carlson, you've seen it through some of our PRI community around you in the Seattle area. But again, it just brings us back to the point of this discussion. And that is kind of the two of you and the three of you with Jason and your life's work around this subject. As we talked about earlier, Dr. Carlson, you have dedicated your life to it, and you shared with us a fraction of the, you know, the doors that you tried to break through, if you will. There's no doors that need to be broken through here in this community. So that's really the cool thing about what we're trying to do here and what we will do on April 21st. And that's really the cool thing about our symposiums every year, is that people will be coming to hear your stories and hear exactly what you both just described, and to hear it openly and without reservation, and they're here to learn and to grow off of your history. So a couple of last things I wanted to mention, Dr. Carlson, you know, we mentioned your books. We have a couple of those on our website that we resell for you if anyone's interested. We have the Analyzing the Stomatomathic System, and we have the Orthocranial Occlusion and Dentition Design. You mentioned the Beyond Dentistry book as well, that you think people would benefit from. But we have more information on that material available if anyone's interested. I don't know, Dr. Carlson, do you have any... I really apologize if I missed it, but do you have a website or anything else that you would like to direct people to other than those publications for more information on your work?
At the moment, I don't have a website.
So the books will be the best place to learn your history and your thinking.
I just don't have the resources.
Yep.
After a symposium like this, we might even, you know, we might make some of that accessible.
What we've done is bring your work to our community. Yeah. So if anyone is interested in more of your conversation, I know that you have already personally driven a lot of people both to our science and to this type of a conversation. You know, mm-hmm. Take PRI out of it. You're an amazing integrator. You have integrated with people all over the world. you know, on really a regular basis. So I think, not to speak for you, but I think that you are open to conversation if anyone has questions about your work or, you know, your life's career in general. So, you know, feel free to reach out to us if any of our listeners have questions. But really, you know, primarily, we're so excited to welcome you back in about a month. So I want to really thank you for sitting down with us this morning. As I mentioned to you earlier, we're really starting to focus on that symposium about, you know, a little over a month away, and can't wait to see you here in person. So thank you again for joining us today.
And Jim, I just don't want to hang up and have people think that this opportunity is going to come again. This is one of those, and it sounds like I'm selling a symposium here, but I'm not. I'm being honest. Just the thing that you said today a few minutes ago about your affinity for proprioception, anybody who's interested in proprioception and as it relates to the steering house, the mechanism that we direct ourselves with, I think this symposium will accomplish that. So again, I my sentiment is the same as RJ's. I appreciate you more ways than you'll imagine, but it'll be great to see you here in Lincoln.
Thanks RJ. Again.
Yeah. Thank you, everybody.
If you're interested in learning more about the Postural Restoration Institute, you can visit our website at posturalrestoration.com. You can also email me directly at info@posturalrestoration.com or follow us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter to see how PRI Nation is currently applying this science. As always, thank you for listening, and I look forward to having you on our next episode.